Lakoved, I don't think so. I think they're randomly arranged. If there are no kosher restaurants nearby, may I enter a non-kosher establishment to drink a cup of coffee or soda? May I assume that Starbucks coffee is okay? The first question is one of Marisayin. Some achrayim are of the opinion that Marisayin is only prohibited if it's mentioned in the Gemara. Kol davar sharos hachachamim mishum Marisayin. Afilu b'chadri chadorim also. So the Stechemin quotes some. Stechemin has a long essay on this. Stechemin is an encyclopedia that's approximately alphabetically arranged, not 100%. The Aleph is all together, but Eretz Yisrael is first, because he was born in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael shouldn't be the first thing in the letter Aleph, but within the letters, it's not alphabetically arranged. So the Stechemin has a long essay about Marisayin. So he quotes some Achrayim who say that Kol Dabar Sha'asu Chachamim Shem Marisayin, only one Sha'asu Chachamim, whatever the Chachamim didn't mention. So they never said anything about eating in a non-kosher establishment. So it's Heter Gomer. That's not the generally accepted opinion. What's usually assumed is, like we mentioned from Rav Soloveitchik, we had in Simon Peizayin, in the Ramah, in the Shach, the Machlokes about the Marisayin on the Rabbonins. So what Rav Soloveitchik thought was, Marisayin is a Nisa Marisayin. In every generation, it depends where there's a problem of Marisayin. Kol Dabar Sha'asu Chachamim Mishum Marisayin, if the rabbis of the Tanoim singled it out and they specifically mentioned that this is a problem, then it's even going to be us afilu b'chadri chadorim, because they said it's prohibited to hang up wet laundry on Shabbos. So even if it's b'chadri chadorim, since they specifically singled that out, that action is a pool of asura. So that's also even if no one is watching. But the things that are not mentioned in the Gemara, there's still a problem on Marisayin. The Pashtus and the Mishnayis in Shviyas, you have a couple of prokim there, Masech and Shviyas. The Marisayin is an Issa deraisa, v'yisim nikim Hashem and Yisrael. In any situation where there's an issue of Marisayin, so you're not allowed to do it. So I think years ago, there was really an issue of Marisayin. If an Orthodox Jew would enter into a non-kosher establishment, there are two parts to Marisayin. We spoke about this when we learned Simon Peizayin. One aspect of Marisayin is that people may think that the place is kosher. Some parents came to enroll their son here in the yeshiva, so they went to eat in a non-kosher restaurant across the street from the old building. They thought it's kosher. They saw some students eating there. They saw some students eating there, so they thought it must be under supervision. It's mamish nevelus a treif. It's chaza treif. So one issue, if a Jew is going to go into a non-kosher place to go to use the restroom or to buy a Coca-Cola, someone may think that it's kosher. So in a certain sense, it's a form of lifniva l'sitei michshol. It's not lifniva b'kumbi yaseh. If I invite you to my home and I give you a tray for food, that's mamish lifniva b'kumbi yaseh. Here, I want to go to the restroom. The mela, someone may think I'm going to buy Coca-Cola. So someone may think that it's kosher. So that's sort of lifniva b'shevi altasa. But it's still an issue of lifniva. And then the other aspect of Marisayin is that people will think that I'm a hypocrite, that one is not permitted to destroy his own reputation. Not only is it also to say Lashon Hara about someone else, one is not allowed to say Lashon Hara against himself. That's a famous story about the Chofetz Chaim, that he was once traveling on the train, and there was another religious Jew in the cabin with him, so he asked him, where is he going? So they said, he lives in Radin, he's going to Radin. So he said, oh, you live in Radin, you know, the holy tzaddik of the generation, the Chofetz Chaim. What's going to say? Yeah, that's me, nice to meet you. So he didn't know what to say. He said, yeah, I know him. So he said, tell me over some nisim in the floor. So Nachafetz Chaim. So he didn't know what to say. So he kept on knocking himself down. He kept on saying, well, he's not the big tzaddik that you think he is. So the other balabos was very upset, saying, what are you mevaza, the holy tzaddik, the famous tzaddik gadol Nachafetz Chaim? So when he finally got off the train, when he got to Radin, they were both going to Radin, finally got off the Radin. So the Chafetz Chaim ran home because he didn't know how to get out of this pickle over here. And then that night he went to shul for Mincha Ma'ariv, and he went up to daven in the front, his makom kavur. So the balabos daven in yeshiva that night. Chafetz Chaim lived right across the street from the yeshiva. So the balabos daven in the yeshiva, so he realized that man who was talking to him on the train, he is the Chafetz Chaim. He was sitting in the front. So he went up to the Chafetz Chaim and he apologized why he gave him such a hard time on the train. So the Chafetz Chaim said at that time, no, it's my fault. I wrote so many svarim on Lashon Hara, and I forgot to write the most important thing, that one is not permitted even to say Lashon Hara against himself. So Rav Soloveitchik used to comment that chiddush of the Chafetz Chaim, that's the hadin in the Mishnah. That's what That's what Marisayin is all about. A person is not the balabas over his own reputation. I have no right to destroy my own reputation. Just like I have no right to destroy someone else's reputation, I am not the owner of my own reputation. I have no right to destroy. So this Stechemet points out that these are two different aspects of Marisayin. One aspect is sometimes it's a lifnei evil, a sita michshol. I'll be marshal other people. They're going to think that the food is kosher in this non-kosher establishment. And the other aspect is that sometimes people will think that I'm a hypocrite. They'll see me go into this non-kosher restaurant. And they know me. So they say, look at the faker. He claims to be religious and he goes and he's going to eat in a non-kosher place. So that you have to be concerned about both of them. So years ago, if a Jew would go into a non-kosher restaurant, for sure there would be a Marisayin problem. Either he'll be misleading people into thinking that it's kosher there, or people will think that he's a hypocrite. Now I think it became, in the New York area, it became so, Yadua Mefursam, a lot of times a Jewish lawyer will go into a non-kosher restaurant and he'll drink Coca-Cola or have a banana or something, eat an apple. Everybody knows that today. So I think now in the New York area, I don't think there's any more a Marisayin. Marisayin depends on the circumstances. Like Rav Soloveitchik used to say, when they first introduced Shabbos clocks, so the first people who used it for the first 2 years or so were really in violation of Marisayin. Because the people walking in the street, we see the lights go on, the lights go off, they would assume for sure that these are non-religious Jews, that there was a Marisayin. And then after it became Mekubal, everybody realized that there's a Shabbos clock. So then it became Mutar. So there's no longer any Marisayin. So it depends. Look, and outside of New York, there probably in some communities there's still going to be a Marisayin. I think in New York, everybody knows. Or let's say there are McDonald's on the highway. So everybody, by now, everybody knows that religious Jews will go in to buy a Coca-Cola to use the restroom. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're hypocrites, they're going to eat a ham sandwich, or that the place is kosher. Everybody knows that religious Jews go in to use the telephone or whatever. Do you have the right to assume that Starbucks coffee is okay? I think there are different flavors of Starbucks. Some, I don't know, you have to find out. Some of them may be non-kosher. And a lot of times, the kosher with the non-kosher coffee will come out of the same pipe in the machine. So true, if you'll push the button to get kosher coffee, there certainly will be shishim in the kosher coffee against a few droplets of non-kosher coffee that may still be left in the pipe. It'll be bottled b'shishim, and strictly speaking, it's not really a violation of Eim Avatanis Lachatchila, because it's Ein Kavanasa Levatol. You're not really interested in those few droplets of the non-kosher coffee. Strictly speaking, it's mutter, but I don't drink coffee. But strictly speaking, it's a mutter, but probably an observant Jew would probably not want to do it.
What about your Rebbe's reason for the going to a non-kosher restaurant to get a drink or whatever it is? It's only mutter in context of like a business meeting. Let's say just Tom, you wanted to like go into a trade restaurant and get like a cup of coffee or a soda or something. Would that also be mutter, or is it only in the context of like a business meeting that would be okay?
No, I think today it's a dovi yadua. In New York, I think it's a dovi yadua, that the religious Jews will go into a non-kosher restaurant to use it for other purposes. I think so. You got to judge in each case. Do you think there is? There's no chad v'chadorim, because the chachamim, the way Rav Soloveitchik accepted that position, that opinion in the achronim, the isa chad v'chadorim, even if no one's watching, it's still an isa marisayin. That's only if dovash osu chachamim mishum marisayin. Only if the rabbi singled it out specifically.
What about in a place where there are no other Yisraelim, like in foreign countries and things like that?
And the non-Jews don't know anything about kashrus. They don't know whether it's okay for me or not okay for me. It's not right that the non-Jews should think that I'm a hypocrite. If they know that the observant Jews don't eat non-kosher, and they're going to think that I'm compromising on my principles, it's also an iser of chashoda. They'll think poorly of me. They'll think that I'm a hypocrite.
Any male that is taking off a kippah, taking off a hat, or putting on a hat?
Probably there is, yeah. The guy puts on a baseball cap, so there won't be any, neither. There won't be a, unless they know who he is, goes with a beard and pays, and not going to help, he's going to wear a baseball cap. Okay. May I buy kosher fish in a non-kosher fish store? And if I can, how do I get about arranging it? In a non-kosher fish store, so they're going to take the fish and put it on the table, then they're going to cut it up. So you're going to have the schmaltz from the tray for fish on the table. So then if they're going to put the kosher fish on top of the same table, there's going to be schmaltz from the non-kosher fish that's going to get stuck to the kosher fish. This is going to pose a problem. It happens that usually in the fish industry, they're usually extremely medactic not to mix together the flavors of one fish and the other. I don't know why, but that's what they say. They're always very medactic, so they'll always put a sheet of paper on the table because they don't want to blend the schmaltz from one fish with the other fish. So if they have a separate sheet of paper, and then they're usually very careful about the knives also. You have to make sure that they have a sheet of paper on a clean sheet of paper on the table, and they have a different knife. Strictly speaking, the treifa knife, let's say if the usually if you cut treifa fish with a knife, everything is tzaynin b'tzaynin, so the knife doesn't become treif. The only concern is that there will be schmaltz, treifa schmaltz bien on the surface of the knife, so that if you wash off well, so you'll get it off. Usually they do wash it off well, so you have to make sure that they washed it off well. Here in the neighborhood, they have in a non-kosher, in the non-Jewish fish shop, they have a Jewish person working there several hours a week, and the religious Jews know that he sets aside a separate knife that's only used for the kosher fish. But strictly speaking, even if the Nochri doesn't have a separate knife, if you see that the knife that he's using is clean, and everything is betzainen, so then there's no problem. If, however, you didn't see that the knife was clean, and there may be schmaltz bien, which usually is not the case, ruba, they're careful not to mix the flavors of the fish. So if you're not sure, if you don't know, so then it's not enough just, the shaksa, it's not enough just to wash off the fish under flowing water, because the schmaltz of the fish is going to get so stuck, you have to scrape off the surface of the fish. So you're going to cut off a section of the fish afterwards.
What do you say about the members of Costco where the fish is there already presented, but they have a special fish department, so you can't see what they're doing?
I mean, it's already cut up.
It's cut up already. I thought when I spoke about you, they felt that it was not a problem, but the assumption is that there's a special fish department, they know what they're doing, so you don't see the process, but it's not the professional people who are doing it.
Right, even if the fact would be that they took the same knife and they cut the non-kosher fish and it has schmaltz bien from the non-kosher fish, and then they would cut the kosher fish and there'll be treif of schmaltz wiped off on the kosher fish. But then the Taz writes, there's a Ramon a Taz where he says, if you cut so many fish, how long are you going to be wiping off the schmaltz on the pieces of the kosher fish? After a while, there isn't going to be any more schmaltz left bien. So now you're probably going to have a taruvis of all of these slices of kosher fish. Some of them have treif of schmaltz on them, some of them don't have. There's going to be a taruvus of chad betrei. Chad betrei is going to be bottled. That's how the Ramon and the Taz say. That's what we assume.
When you said, well, cut it off, is that kedei klip or is that greater?
I think not kedei klip. I think it's just to scrape off greater. You have to scrape off a little bit. Kedei klip is more than that.
What about the identification of the fish?
Identification, there are tens of thousands of fish. At least tens of thousands of different fish, and there's no way the world's greatest expert, the world's greatest ichthyologist, has no way to identify what the fish is once the skin is removed. It's impossible to identify. Salmon, we assume you can identify based on the color, and that's also fading away. That identification is fading away because now they came to the realization that the reason why the salmon has that specific color is because of the diet that the salmon eats, and you can give a treif of fish the exact same diet and it'll have that pinkish color. So it's possible to have treif of fish that have the same color. It's also possible to put in food coloring that the treif of fish will look exactly the same color as salmon. So we still assume that if you have a pinkish fish and they tell you that it's salmon, we still assume that it's a simen mubik, and that you can assume that it's salmon, but it's soon going to disappear. That assumption is soon going to fade away because they're growing specifically, they're growing treifa fish on the same diet that the salmon eats, and the treifa fish are going to have the same color. So that's a problem. You always have to make sure that you see some scales on the fish. We assume any the fish, the Mishnah Nida says, any fish that has scales will certainly have fins. If it has fins, it'll not necessarily have scales, but if it has scales, it certainly has fins. If you just see one or two scales, and maybe that these scales were on this fish was sitting on another fish that had scales. You have to see, you have to know for sure that these scales are from this fish, that they didn't come from another fish. The Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch talk about that. A lot of times they pile up all the fish one on top of the other. So you got to see a few scales to make sure that the scales came from this fish. I would say. I know that there's a trefa. There are non-kosher flavors in coffees. I don't drink any coffees, but some of the flavors in the coffees are non-kosher. So I assume that an observant Jew would probably not want to push the button that has the kosher coffee going out the same pipe where the non-kosher coffee came before. He knows in advance that he's going to have a little trefa, a few drops of trefa coffee that's going to certainly be bottled b'shishim in his kosher coffee. Strictly speaking, it's mutter. He's an inkabanos elevatl. He's going to have the same hanor from the coffee with or without those three drops. The coffee is not going to, the flavor of the kosher coffee is not going to be enhanced because of the fact that he has three drops of the non-kosher coffee. He's not going to have more to drink. It's absolutely inkabanos elevatl. Whenever you're in violation of eima batanis lechatchila because of a psikreshe, that's what happens over here. When I push the button for the kosher coffee, it's a psikreshe that some of the non-kosher droplets are going to be blended in with the kosher coffee. So that's the din. The psikreshe is mutter by the din of eima batanis lechatchila. But still, I assume a person who's always careful about kashas would probably find it repulsive. If the rating is batel, so then it's nisbatel. But to push the button, I'm going to be the one responsible for this. I would assume that people wouldn't want to do it, even though strictly speaking it is mutter.
And the prepackaged fish. If it's not identifiable, other than the fact that Costco put the name of it, that is, we know it's a kosher fish.
And it doesn't have any skin on it, then you can't rely. No, you can't rely. The biggest, as I said, the biggest ichthyologist in the world has no way to identify what the fish is. They always mix together different kinds of fish. Whenever you have a batch of fish that are 99% one type of fish, there's always going to be 1% of other fish mixed in. And they look very similar. And that's, even though the ruba deruba akasha, that's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Avodah Zarah, the Mishnah lists off which foods you're not allowed to buy from a goy arosa b'hanor, yainesach stam yainet, which foods you're not allowed to buy from a goy arosa b'achila, muta b'hanor, which food you may buy from a goy, it's muta b'achila, and there's no issue of kashrus. So the Mishnah gives us an example, tris trufa. Tris is a fish. Rashi says it's a tuna fish. But tris trufa, Rashi writes tunina, tuna fish. So Rashi writes tris trufa, even though it's 991 of, when they catch them, 991 of the fish are kosher, and only one is going to be a non-kosher fish, that's the gzera de rabbanon, that if they remove the skin, you're not allowed to eat the fish, you have no right to go basa roif. They made a separate gzera de rabbanon, not to follow roif. Some rishonim understand, the Rambam understands that this is a din min ha-Torah, it's not a gzera de rabbanon. Rambam lists off in what he considers are the tayag mitzvahs ha-Torah. He has four mitzvahs: to be bodek b'simani oif tohar, to be not to eat a fowl unless you check; to be bodek b'simani of tohar; to be bodek b'simani behema tohar; to be bodek b'simani dak tohar; and to be bodek b'simani chagovim, those who enjoy eating grasshoppers; to be bodek b'simanim. What's the mitzvah to be bodek b'simanim? So the Menchas Chinuch explains, based on a rivash that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that even if the roiv is ruba deruba is that it's kosher. That's the halacha here. It's a special mitzvah not to rely on the roiv, not to go basa roiv. And if you'll eat the fish based on the roiv, you won't be in violation of the loy seser of eating a non-kosher fish, but you have been mevatel a mitzvah seser bedika b'simanei dag tohar. So according to the Rambam, that's an isa deraisa to eat, even though the ruba, we know the ruba are going to be kosher fish, and usually you have a right to go basa roiv. Here you'll be in mevatel that mitzvah, lived up the simane dag tohar. May I go into an ordinary store, example, a supermarket, a fruit store, and buy a cut watermelon? Can I eat cut fruit at a hotel that does not have a hashgacha? The second question, can you eat cut fruit in a hotel that doesn't have a hashgacha? I always used to assume that what are they, nuts in the kitchen? What are they, Mishugayim? They're going to take the treif and knife that they just cut chazer schmaltz with, and they're going to cut the vegetables, they're going to cut the fruits. Of course they wash it off. If I would be in the kitchen, of course I would wash it off. I wouldn't want to. So that's what I used to think. So I once said this in public at a singles function where they had a rabbi session at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night, and one of the OU weekends. So someone from the audience raised his hand and he said, "Rabbi, I used to work in a hotel for many years," and he says, "It's not necessarily so." He says, "It all depends on the chef in the kitchen. You can have a 5-star hotel and the chef is a schlocky guy, and he'll cut the chazer schmaltz, and then they have an order for cut up fruits. So take the knife with the chazer schmaltz and cut the fruit. And then you can have a no-star hotel, a schlocky hotel, where the rooms are swarming with bugs, and all the carpets are filthy, and the chef in the kitchen is medak bekanikias." He said, "It's not Toby Zebizeh how many stars the hotel has. It all depends. Someone has to go into the kitchen and find out what the story is." So it's like this. If they have, we said before, if they have a lot of fruits that are cut up, a lot of vegetables that are cut up, so then we assume, even if he used the treife knife with the chazer schmaltz on it to cut them up, but after the first couple of watermelons, all the chazer will be already wiped off, so there won't be any more schmaltz at the end. And you have a tarubis of sliced watermelon. So it's a tarubis of yavish b'yavish, it'll be bottled where you can eat it. If you go to a restaurant and you order, everybody else is eating chazer schmaltz, eating tray for fish and chazer, I'm going to order a cut up fruit salad. So then they're just going to make a fruit salad for me. So it may well be that in the kitchen the chef is a schlocky guy, he's not makbid on the kiyas. So he'll take the same knife that he cut the treifas with, and he'll cut your watermelon with. But if they have a lot of watermelons that are cut up, so that's what we assume, that's what the Ramah and the Taz and Shulchan Aruch assume, that after cutting the first couple of watermelons, all the chazer schmaltz will be wiped off already, and then those treifa watermelons will be bottled, chad betray, and the kosher watermelons. Some melons will be a davar chorif.
Yeah, like because the knife is even zed binyamo be machayale with melon.
I don't know what a melon. I don't think is a davar chorif. I'm not so familiar with melons.
Like lemons or
a lemon. Like that. The lemon may be a problem. Okay. But even forgetting about the davar chorif can even take out a bli yisayanena binyamo. Forget about that. The chef in the kitchen may take a treif a knife that has chazer schmaltz on the end and cut an onion and cut a lemon with it. It may be treif is bien. Forget about the b'liyah. So if you just have you're just ordering one platter of cut up fruits or vegetables, you may have a problem that maybe treif is stuff bien over there.
Is this in the bodega where there's less quantity of stuff, so that a rabbi would recommend not getting fruit from there? Maybe a convenience store, but they go where they often sell cut fruit because it's not high volume. So
and they also sell, and they also slice straight for salamis.
Ready food. They might have other stuff that which is there. And they might have a fruit bar. They also have other food which is there also. Like most places in the city, they'll have food and also fruit.
And they have a lot of cut up fruit.
Yeah, not like a hotel, but.
If they have a lot, then we assume that all the treifus is probably wiped off already on the first couple of slices that they did. So it's a tarubis of yavish b'yavish, yeah. Must they have separate dishwashers for meat and dairy? The common practice is that we are makbid about that. Now, Moshe Feinstein argues out the case in his tshuvas. So I remember once someone called me up on the telephone, they wanted to know, what did Rabbi Soloveitchik say about dishwashers for meat and dairy? So yes, I don't know. But would they be satisfied from a psak lehokel of Rav Moshe Feinstein? That they said lehokel from, yeah. That's good enough. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a whole tshuva where he explains that this is not by not by not the hetera. He thinks that everything is not by not by not the hetera. The meaning is that we don't do it. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes years ago the dishwashers used to have a separate section for the cutlery, and that separate section used to have a basket that had tiny little holes in it. So the tiny little holes were such, of such a nature, that particles could get caught in these tiny holes, and it was hard to clean them out. So Moshe writes, you can use the same dishwasher for fleshiks and miltiks, because he thinks it's going to be a nad bar nad bar nad de hetera, but you have to use a different basket for the fleshik cutlery and for the milchik cutlery, because of the concern that you're going to have bien over there. Today, I think they don't have like that. They don't have tiny little holes. So you don't have that concern of having bien over there. But the minig is we don't do that. Really, you should have two different dishwashers. In hospitals, it's very difficult to sometimes it's difficult to insist on having two different dishwashers. So they make all the OU gives a hechsher on some hospital. I forgot already which one it is. So they make all to allow them to do hagola in between fleishiks and milchiks when they use the dishwasher. How do you kasher a non-kosher dishwasher? So the whole bli is all your day hamayim, b'amtzos hamayim, so you do hagolah. So you have to have mayim roschim, you have to have ma'ala babus, the water has to be 212. Water has to be 212 when you do hagolah. We are makel, if you have a big shas hatchak, we are makel to apply the principle of kibola kachpolto. Usually kibola kachpolto means something else. From the three different forms of kosherization, you can either do libun. Sometimes we require libun, sometimes we require hagola, and sometimes we would require mili v'yiri gimel yomim. You have the non-kosher kli, soak in water for more than 24 hours, and you change the water, soaks a second time, and then you change the water, soaks a third time. Whenever the bliya was al gabi ha'esh, a broiler, the tray for bliya was al gabi ha'esh, then you need libun. Whenever the bliya was shaloy al gabi ha'esh, or b'yamtso samayim, then I cook tray for soup in a pot, then you need hagolim. Whenever the bliya was al yidei kovush, so then sometimes if it's hetera bala, sometimes in certain cases, chometz kodem ha'pesach, so then we are makel to do mili v'yirigim yom. So that's usually what it means, kibola kachpolto, to determine which form of kosherization is required. And then the recent Poskim came up with another concept that they refer to as kibola kachpolto. If I know that it only was balea trefis ayide bishul at 180 degrees temperature, it never reached 212 degrees. So then the Poskim amekel, if you have the minig is that you always need hagola with mayim roschim, with mala resicha. Ma'ale Resicha, Rav Moshe always writes in Reshiyud Beis, 212. You always need Reshiyud Beis. You need 212 degrees. And if it's a big Shas HaTchak and you simply can't reach 212, so then Rav Moshe and the Chazon Ish and Dayan Weiss from the Eidach HaRedes, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank and many other contemporary Poskim, Rov of the Poskim, there are those who disagree, Rov of the Poskim assume that you say Kibola Kachpolta, you can do a Hagola with less than 212 degrees. But it's only if you have a big Shas HaTchak. If you want to, let's say, do parve ice cream on the same machinery we did milchig ice cream, because it's not such a big shas atrak that we have to have parve ice cream. So that's not right to be makel for that. But if it's some item that is important, it is important. Let's say they did non-kosher food on it, and you have to do some kosher food. It's important to have this kosher food. So then we would be makel to allow hagola on a non-kosher dishwasher with kibola kachpolti, even though the water is not 212. Sometimes you get the water to be 212. Sometimes you can get it. Let's say if it's in your private home, if it's in a, let's say, an apartment building, and it's a Jewish apartment building on Bennett Avenue on this Friday afternoon, when everybody's taking a shower for Shabbos, so you're not going to have so much hot water there. So that's not a smart idea. So do the hagola at some time in the day or the night when you know you're going to have burning hot water. You can arrange it in such a way that you have a 212 degree burning hot water. But at least you should do a hagola, at least to do the hagola with kibola kachpolta.
Why didn't the other poskim like Rav Moshe's heter of one dishwasher?
That is a not by not by not. A lot of times when some of the women are always careful, they always wash off the fleishig schmaltz and the milchig schmaltz in the sink, and then they put the dishes into the dishwasher when they're already basically clean. So what do they need the whole dishwasher for? To get the dust off. I don't know, mefunokim, to get the dust off. But other people put into the dishwasher, they put in plates that have schmaltz on it beyond, so the schmaltz is going to bang into the walls of the dishwasher directly. So it won't be a bli of, won't always be a not bar, not bar, not.
Is this a soap poigem?
We assume the soap is poigem, yeah. There are different kinds of dishwashers. Sometimes the first run that just rinses off the schmaltz bien doesn't have the detergent kick in yet. They only have the detergent kick in after the first run that you really, the first run is just to wash off the bien. And then you have the detergent kick in. So if you have a dishwasher where it has detergent from the very outset, so it's always going to, the bli is always going to be a davar apogim, so then then we assume you have no problem. But then not all the dishwashers are like that.
The dishwasher is plastic? Is it the makeup
being magil plastic? Moshe Feinstein is machmed that one should not kasher plastic dishes for chumer de chometz, for Pesach, but for treifus he's also makel that you can kasher plastic. Most of the poskim are makel even for Pesach. That you can kasher plastic. Years ago, the dishwashers, could be that they still are. They have, they're made with the lining and the inside is cheres, is earthenware. So Rav Moshe in his tshuvas originally used to say that you can't kasher a dishwasher because the inside lining is kli cheres, it's enamel, it's kli cheres. Then the Tendler family says over the Rav Moshe in his old age was told that was a misinformation, that the material with which the dishwashers are made is really a blend of different materials. So what's the dintak if you have a kli that's made of a blend of different materials? Part of it is stone and part of it is earthenware. So the Mishnayos have a Maseches Kelim b'negiyos to Kabbalas Tumah. A kli even is not mekabel tumah, and kli avanim and Kli avonim are not mekabel tumah, kli cheres are mekabel tumah, and you can't even be tovel it in a mikveh. So the Mishnah says it depends on the roiv. If more than 50% is evan, it's dinu kevan. More than 50% is cheres, it's dinu kecheres. So a lot of the poskim say the same is true regarding kashrus, that if a roiv of the kli, if it's a blend, a lot of times the kelim are a blend of different materials. So if more than 50% of it is evan, then you can do hagolim. So Rav Moshe, that's how the Tendler family says, Rav Moshe felt bad b'sof yomav that he was machmer on people's dishwashers, shaloi kedin, that really part of it is cheres, but that's less than 50%, and most of it is evan. Most of it is other material, it does lend itself to hagola. You have a problem, sometimes the dishwasher has a container to hold all the particles, that the particles shouldn't go through the pipe, it shouldn't clog up the pipe. So you have to, when you're going to kasher the dishwasher, if you want to use it for fleshiks and milchiks b'zach hazeh, let's say Rav Moshe holds mikra adin, you can use fleshiks and milchiks b'zach hazeh, and there's no problem, everything is not banat banat the hetera, and there's no problem. But then you may have a problem, there may be some schmaltz collected bien sitting there in a container, there may be some cheese particles collected bien, so you have to empty out that container that has all the bien. I think now when they make dishwashers, if I'm not mistaken, it's one solid piece, the inside. Years ago, maybe some of them are still like that, they have different pieces of material that are screwed together with a screw. So that's a din in Shulchan Aruch. If you have a kli that's made up of two different pieces that are held together, stuck together, you cannot do hagolah the way it stands. You have to unscrew it and do the hagolah on each part, in each piece of the kli separately, because we're concerned maybe some particles may have gotten stuck in the crack in between the two pieces. That says the Shulchan Aruch, you shouldn't do a hagol on a knife if the handle of the knife is wooden and the blade of the knife is metal, so the two different pieces stuck together, so there's a concern maybe some particles will get stuck in between. So the same is true on some of the old dishwashers, there were different pieces that are held together with a screw, so there may be some particles there. Even if there are particles there, but you're going to have shishim, however many particles that may possibly be caught there in the crack, you're going to have shishim in the water that's shooting all over the place against those particles. But the evidence is going to be mutter. But l'chatchil, it says in Shulchan Aruch that you're supposed to really unscrew the parts when you do a hagolah. But I think now most of the dishwashers do not have separate parts. It's all one big piece of metal inside, one big piece of plastic, whatever it happens to be. Now I wash part of the dishes in the dishwasher after using it for meat or dairy dishes. According to Rav Moshe, everything is a not by not by not the hetera. Others are not so convinced. Rav Moshe is so insistent on that. He writes a few tshuvas. He says, I already wrote about this. Why do you keep on asking the same thing? I already wrote a tshuva. It's a heter gomer. It's a not banad banad heter. He keeps on insisting. I don't know. The others are not so convinced that that's the case. I think the meaning is that people don't do it. The meaning is that you designate your dishwashers either for fleshiks or for milchiks. You don't use it for fleshiks and milchiks, not like Rav Moshe's heter. Or you don't use it for parva and for fleshiks. You use it for one or the other or the other. Must I have separate stovetops for meat and dairy pots? Remember when we learned Yerideya, Rav Soloveitchik said, boys, when you become wealthy, you should have a separate stove for fleshik and a separate stove for milchiks, because something always spills over. And the cooler that says in Shulchan Aruch that whatever spills over is going to become nisra by the fire, he says, hehinktunta, it's not exactly so 100% true. You have no right really to assume like that. Everything, whatever fleshik is going to fall off is going to become nisraf. Why is it going to be nisraf? A piece of flesh is going to fall off on the burner. It's going to sit there for a long time. So to assume that everything gets burnt out, says it's not so convincing. So strictly speaking, we assume that the burners get burnt out. Even if some milchik spilled on the burner, we assume it's going to get kashered out. But Rav Soloveitchik recommended if you can afford it, you should designate two burners for fleshik, two burners for milchiks. I have two different stoves, one for fleshik and one for milchiks. May I cook on a non-kosher stovetop, for example, a rented vacation home or an apartment? Yeah, what's the hashash over here? Maybe the people before me cooked some tray for food and the chazer, pieces of chazer fell on the burner. Everything looks clean now. So maybe a piece of chaza got nibble on the burner. Now I'm going to put my kosher pot on the burner, so the bliya is going to go through. So is that true? Does a bliya go through? So we have a klal, Tosfos has in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. We learned in Adaf Yud Aleph, Daf Yud Beis in Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara says, Me'olam lo halachta letzur, you never went to the city in Chutz La'aretz, where they have Jews and non-Jews staying in the same hotel, and the Jew has a kosher pot, and the non-Jew has a non-kosher pot, and the two pots are touching each other. They're both cooking. You never saw that. The Gemara seems to say that it's hetagoma. Why is it hetagoma? Because we assume ein baloi yetzme kli lekli baloi reitev. If there's no reitev, it doesn't go out. See, here also, there's no reitev. If you put a dry kosher pot on top of the dry burner, so the treif of bli and the burner is not going to go through and through into the kosher pot. The only thing is that sometimes you rinse out the pot so there'll be droplets of water on the bottom of the pot. So then you're going to put it on the trefa burner, so there will be right of going through. Or once in a long while, a balabasta cooks and something spills over. Once in a long while, it does happen. Even to the most capable balabasta, so something, some of the soup is going to spill over. Then you may have right of in between the burner with the kosher pot. So by the time I come to the rented vacation home or the rented apartment, whatever, by the time I come, the burner is going to be Eina Ben Yoma, so it's not going to make treif b'di'evit. Eina Ben Yoma does make treif b'di'evit. Well, l'chatchila, you're not supposed to use it. So a simple solution would be very poshut. Let's say you take some tin foil and you wrap around the prongs of the burner, so that even if it would have been a Ben Yomo, even if the burner is trey from a bliya of a Ben Yomo, but the bliya is not going to go through, there isn't, the reitav is going to be in between the pot and the tin foil that I wrapped around. The reitav is not going to go in between that. So that'll solve your whole problem. Or if you want to kasha the burners, they turn on the fire. The thing is that the burners are standing up. Burners are like 2 inches above the flame. So you have to pick the burners up and turn them upside down so they'll be mamish in the flame to kasha them out. So that's not so difficult. Take a few minutes to kasha them out to make them burning hot.
What about in the new electric stoves where it's like one surface?
Then you got a big problem. The new stoves that are one big surface are really a problem. You can't that. You can't kasha that out. Very often they're glass. The top is glass.
Can you assume that it runs out?
The Mechaber writes for Sfardim that they assume the glass is not balea. We know, in fact, that the taka, the glass, is not balea. And Ashkenazim are machmer like the Ramah, that that not only we make believe as if glass is balea, we treat it as if it's klicheres, that you can't even do hagola. You can do libun, but it'll probably crack. It'll probably break if you try to do libun.
If in our own houses we don't have two separate stovetops for milk and meat, would it make sense to be machmer in a hotel?
If what?
If normally are the practices, if our
we don't have separate, yeah,
for milk and meat, would it make sense to be machmer in a hotel?
Machmer in a hotel
to not use
what?
There to not to kosher it or to not.
I mean,
use
I have a
hotel.
Stove in my private room. To not to use their stove.
I'm saying if I normally don't have separate stovetops in my own house, I use the same one for milchik and fleishik.
Right.
Would it make sense? Would I then have to kosher the stovetop in the hotel? Is that any worse than my own house?
Being in the hotel may be surabola. To the extent that you're able to be machmeh, you should always try to be machmeh. So let's say to wrap tinfoil around, that's an easy solution. To keep on wrapping at home, fleshing and milking, it's a pain in the neck. Stomach, that's too much of a tircha. But if you go in a hotel, where it's easy to avoid the whole thing, whatever you can do, you should do. Whatever chumis you can observe would be smart.
In
Kli Balei Mekli Balei Right, the Taisvis in Avodah Zarah seems to learn the Gemara that it's Heta Gomel Lachatchila. The Ramah quotes that. Then the Ramah quotes another practice, and he says, "And Miu Nogu Lachatchila Lahachmer Bazeh." So some Achrayim say the Nogu Lachatchila Lahachmer goes even on In Kli Balei Mekli Balei Right. But the Pashtus is that that's not what the Ramah meant. Pashtus in the Gemara is that that's Mutal Gamre. Ain't Kli Balei Mekli Balei Right. It was Mutal Lachatchila. The Ramah says Noga Lachatchila Lahachma goes on the other thing that the Ramah said, not on the Ain't Kli Balei Mekli Balei Right. But the problem is that something may spill over, so then you will have Reitim, so there will be a Bliya. So usually by the time I'll come to this rented apartment, it'll be the burner will be in Eina Ben Yom already. So Lachatchila Nemeid Gzeir, Eina Ben Yom, Ata Ben Yom. It's not right to be Mekel. What is the din if something hot falls in the middle of the stove? What do you mean falls in the middle of the stove on top? On top of the stove. You don't put pots on top of the stove? I mean, some kosher food. Some kosher food, burning hot kosher food falls in the middle of the stove, and it may be that the people before me have some treifas that was nivla there. So if I know for sure that it's Eina Ben Yomo, so then Eina Ben Yomo doesn't make treifa. If I see it's clean, there's no bien. The only shaila is the bliya. So the bliya, I'll probably know whether it's Ben Yomo or Eina Ben Yomo. If I move in, the stomach is going to be Eina Ben Yomo, the treifas. So Eina Ben Yomo does nasa b'dievet. I can kasher the grates on my stove. You can kasher either by putting them, I can take the grates, put them into a self-cleaning oven, that's mamish libun. Or if you just have a continually cleaning oven, not a self-cleaning oven, that's not hot enough to be considered libun, but then you can turn the grates upside down and have them mamish burn in the fire. That'll be a form of libun. The only thing is that usually the grates are arranged in such a way that you're going to have to do it a few times. If you just turn the grates upside down, all the prongs are not going to get so hot. So you have to tilt it over a little bit for 10, 15 minutes, and then tilt it on the other side two or three times you have to do it. So the two or three prongs that will be mamish in the fire will get the burning red hot. But there is a way to do libun on the grates. Not so difficult.
Putting the blech on top, does not putting the blech on top and putting it on the fire and high, that's enough?
Probably also good enough if you put a blech on top and you turn the fire rod very high, so the blech will cause the fire to be concentrated. Yeah, you may burn the blech a little bit. The blech may get a little damaged, But that'll certainly be good for the Liban of the grapes, yeah. We moved into our apartment, so we bought, for Pesach, we bought four separate grates. So we put them away every year. We use them year after year. You can buy them in a hardware store. So we use them every year for Pesach, and all year long we use the regular grates. We kasher them, we use them.
Does it make sense that you use separate grates for meat and dairy?
Does it make sense to?
Use separate grates.
That would be wonderful. Yeah, that's what Rav Soloveitchik recommended. If we'll be wealthy, we should have separate stoves and separate grates. Yeah. So you have to remember whether you're holding by fleshies or not. You have to have different colors, blue and red, and Pesach is going to be orange, whatever. You have to have two for Pesach and two for all year long. Yeah, it's more correct, as you should do like that. You solve all the problems, because a lot of times something will spill over. So there will be a right there. May a regular household often be used for meat and dairy one after the other, or at the same time? At the same time, when Machmel Chatchila, the Gemara in Psochem Daf Ayin Vav on the base, Ayin Zayin on the base. We learned that Ayin Zayin on the base. Gemara has a Machlek with Rav Levi, where the Recha Milsa, Recha La Milsa. So the Tosfos says that Lachatchila, everyone agrees that Recha Milsa. The whole Machlek is only is B'di Yevet. So that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Tosfos says that this Lachatchila, Recha Milsa, is only by a Tana Kotten. By a Tana Gotten, even Lachatchila, there's no problem. So the Pesachei Tshuva has two opinions there. How do you calculate whether you're dealing with a Tana Kotten and Tana Gadol? So maybe there are Tanurim are considered a Tana Kotten, and probably a Tana Gadol, but according to some opinions in the Pesachei Tshuva, that would be considered a Tana Kotten. So l'chatchila, to do meat and dairy at the same time, he wouldn't permit. Even to do meat and challah at the same time, you're making fleshig bread, or milchiks and challah at the same time, you make milchig bread. So that's the rift, that to do bread and fleshik simultaneously is also lechatchila. So to do bevasachas, that for sure lechatchila shouldn't do. What about bezeach hazeh? So Moshe Feinstein has a big chumra in his sefer. He thinks that even bezeach hazeh, if it's within 24 hours, so the fleshiks from yesterday with 20 hours ago will come out, the bli will come out, and enter into the milchiks that you're cooking today. So the yester of Moshe, but it's against the Shulchan Aruch. It says in Shulchan Aruch that bezach hazeh is mutter. So Moshe writes in the second chelik, Igros Moshe, Yeridaya, he writes, I am an old sick man. He wrote many volumes after that. He writes, I'm an old sick man, I have no koach to write shuvas. But you say, he writes to his son, I think Rav Dovifan, but you say that the Rabbanim said what I said is against the Yeridaya, I have to defend what I wrote. He writes a second shuvah, it's still against the Shulchan Aruch. The second shuvah is still against the Shulchan Aruch. Very difficult. So the Pashtus is the way the Darkei Tshuva writes, the Minkatcher writes. He quotes Achran. The Pashtus is that we distinguish between Hevel and Zeyot. That if there's thick steam that's visible, if you have a pot of fleshig soup that's half full, half empty, and then you have a lid on top. So by mistake, you put a milchig lid on top of a fleshig pot. So when you're cooking soup, so the bottom, the soup on the bottom is going to be burning hot, and then on top is going to be thick steam. So the thick steam, that's called hevel. So hevel dina kiroitev. Hevel dina kiroitev. If you would have roitev, if you have burning hot water, the bli would go from the fleshig pot to the milchig pot, from the milchig pot to the fleshig pot. So hevel is dina kiroitev. So if you put by mistake a milchig lid on top of a fleshig pot, they'll both become treif. But if you don't have hevel, you just have zeyo. So zeyo means invisible evaporation. There's always invisible evaporation. So the pashtus in Yeridaya is that when you have invisible evaporation that we refer to as zeya as opposed to hevel, so that's only one directional. So when you cook milchiks in the stove, when you open a stove, there's no a normal oven. There's no thick steam. It could be in a microwave that there is thick steam because it's very small. Everything is very narrow. Or in a what do they call these little ovens? The toaster ovens are very tiny. So it could be over there is thick steam, I don't know. But in a regular oven, you don't have thick steam. You don't have thick steam, especially if there's a vent in the back for all of the hot air to go out. So you just have zeyah. So zeyah pipashtus. So some of the boys tell me when their wife does chicken, after she finishes doing the chicken, the whole walls of the oven are all splattered with schmaltz. If you put your hand in, you can wipe all the grease on your hand. So of course, if the whole inside of the oven is splattered with schmaltz, and you're gonna do milchiks after it. So you've been doing milchiks and fleshiks. But vasachas, not only that, some of the schmaltz on top may drip into the milchiks. So fashteitzach, he can't do that. But if you know that when your wife does the chicken, you open up the oven and later on you put your hand in, it seems that everything is clean. So then we assume the only thing that's a problem is that you have, there's a bliya, there's a fleshig bliya, ayidei zeyah, there's evaporation. So the fleshig bliya will be absorbed into the walls and into the roof of the oven. Then you're going to do milchiks. So there's going to be again zeyah. But zeyah is one directional, it's not the same as hevel. It won't succeed in getting the bliya out from the wall and from the lid back into the milchig food. So the Rambam writes in the Simen of Reicha Milsa that you're permitted to do milchiks and fleshiks b'zachazeh. Pashab shab b'zachazeh means you wait till it cools down to room temperature and then you turn on the fire again. Kozman, it's still hot from the fleshiks, still have the recha there. So then you're going to have a l'chatchila problem of recha milsa.
If they're both covered, could you do it at the same time?
I don't think it's a smart thing to do. Even if they're both covered, there's always going to be evaporation that's going to be going out through the side. I think bevasachas you should never do. But bezachazeh, you wait till it cools off, and then you do bezachazeh.
So you would say that when cooking chicken and challah at the same time, you shouldn't, it's not enough to cover the chicken?
I would assume that that's not enough, right? Because there's still going to be recha floating around. Even if it's covered up, there's still going to be recha.
In the case of hevel, it's enough to wait 24 hours?
Hevel, you mean the second time I'm going to have hevel?
First time you cook with hevel, maybe you want to cook again something that's the opposite.
And so going to be the second time also hevel?
It'll also be hevel.
No, then you're cooking in a cliche in a ben yomo. That's also lechatchila ben rabban. Zeirena ben yomo, to ben yomo, so lechatchila you're not allowed to do it. So again, Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says that, he says based on a prima garden, he says that you're not allowed to cook bezeh hazeh, fleshiks and milchiks in the same oven when it's ben yomo, unless you cover something up. He's very strict about this, and most are mekel on that against Rav Moshe. I remember many years ago I used to discuss many different issues with Rabbi Schwab, who used to be the rabbi in the Breuers community here, because I was the rabbi of the branch of Breuers in Paramus. It started off as a branch, and then when the Balabatim asked Breuers that since we're a branch we'd like to borrow $50,000, they said we don't need you as a branch. So that was the end of the branchhood. So ice branch. I remember the first time I was there on Rosh Hashanah, so they gave me shlishi, and then the Kohen and the Levi, they made a mishaberech for themselves and for their wives and for their children, and I got shlishi. I said a mishaberech for Rabbi Breuer and for Rabbi Schwab. Officially this was a branch of Breuers. So from that time on, everybody got an aliyah and made a mishaber for the rabbi also, for Rabbi Schwab, Rabbi Breuer, Rabbi Schwab. Then I only went once in a long while so I used to give a shiur there in Paramus every Thursday night. I would go once in a long while. For Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur I went, for Simchas Torah I would go. Once in a while I would go for Shabbos, I wouldn't go every week. So one Matzoi Shabbos I get a phone call. One of the Balabatim from Paramus asked me a shaila. What's the din, in abstract, what's the din if they have a shul where they always used to make a mishaberach for a rabbi and one person doesn't want to make a mishaberach for the rabbi? Is that permissible? So I didn't understand what in the world he was talking about. So I said, I have to look up the din in Shulchan Aruch. So then I hang up the phone, Torkadei Diba, another guy calls up and said, did you hear what happened in shul? So I said, no, what happened in shul? So he tells me, they asked the members of the board for a $50,000 loan because they're a branch of Breuers. And they said, we don't need you as a branch. We're not going to give you any loan. So the guy who got the aliyah that Shabbos, no more branch, no more rabbi. So they decide they're not going to say Mishaberach for Rabbi Schwab and Rabbi Breuer anymore. That's not their rabbi anymore. So that was the shaila. So Taki looked it up. Where do I look it up? Where do you look up these dinim? Everything is there in Shulchan Aruch, everything is there. So there's a Sefer Shari Ephraim by Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius, all on Hilchas Kriyas HaTorah. So he has a whole section about the Mishaberachs. So the Shari Ephraim, on the bottom of the page, in the text he doesn't have, on the bottom of the page they have a Likud, a Chassidish Likud from Achrayim. They give everyone who ever said anything that has to do with Kriyas HaTorah, Mishaberachs and everything. So they say there that what I did was wrong in the first place. You only say Mishaberach for the rabbi if the rabbi is in shul that Shabbos. If the rabbi is not in shul, you don't have to say Mishaberach for him. Let's say the first minyan, the Hashkav minyan, the rabbi never shows up. So according to them, it says you don't say Mishaberech for the rabbi. You only say Mishaberech if the rabbi is there in shul. And they quote the Balamor and Erevin says like that. Balamor and Erevin talks about the minik to say Mishaberech for the rabbi if the rabbi is in shul. So I called them back and I said I was wrong that they should have never said Mishaberech in the first place. Okay. So I remember many times I had to speak to Rabbi Schwab what the Menhogim are, because the Balabatim and Paramas weren't always interested in following all of the Menhogim. Some of them were interested, some of them weren't. So I remember one occasion we were talking about this. He said he does not follow Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's Pesach. He told me at that time there's a big Pesach in Borough Park, I think, by the name of Rabbi Moshe Zimmerman. His son is, I think he must have passed away already, his son is a famous Moyle. His son is a cracker, Jack Moyle. He used to give a shiur every year, once a year, for the Smicha students on Hilchas Mila. So this Rabbi Moshe Zimmerman, he says other Moira Hara also, they don't follow Rabbi Moshe on this. Because the Pashtus in the Shulchan Aruch is not like Rabbi Moshe, that we distinguish between Hevel and Zeil, like the Darki Tshuva say. May a toaster oven be used for meat and dairy? I don't have a toaster oven, so I'm not sure. My impression is the toaster oven is very narrow. No, I would think that it may be that it's mamish hevel over there. I would think that's not right, unless everything is mamish wrapped up. If everything is wrapped up, like on the airlines. If everything is wrapped up in tinfoil, so then the blia doesn't go through and through. If there isn't going to be any hevel over there, that's going to go through and through. May a microwave be used in fleshiks and milchiks? Bezeach hazeh, I assume. Microwave also, I think there may be an issue of hevel. My impression is, whenever I use a microwave, when I open it up right away after it's finished, there are always droplets of water on the side. So my impression is that there was thick steam inside. If it just be invisible evaporation, if it just be zeyah, I don't think it should have accumulated any thick steam. My impression is that in a microwave also it could be that you have hevel. And a lot of times it's going to be a ben yomo. Someone just did fleshiks, and you want to do milchiks within the Dutch did fleshiks for supper. You want to do milchiks for breakfast. It's within 24 hours. It'll pose a problem. So the pashtus is, if you put everything in a bag, you put it in a paper bag. So then, even if the walls have a fleshik bli, a milchik bli, or whatever, but it's not going to fly through and through the bag. I don't think you have to close the bag so tightly. If it's in a bag and it's a little bit closed, or if you have, let's say, you have a plastic cover to put on top of the food that you're cooking, you have a milchik tray, you have a fleshik tray, you put milchik food on with a plastic cover on top that has little holes on the side, and the holes are tiny enough that the steam goes out. You have to have holes, otherwise the thing is going to break. Let's say if you're going to heat up soup and you're going to be in a container that's closed, so it's going to plotch, the whole thing is going to break. You have to have holes. So the holes are made in such a way that the steam only goes one direction. The steam doesn't go back in. So I think that solves the problem.
Is one cover enough?
I don't think you need a double cover. The reason why on the airlines they're always insistent on a double wrapping is as a backup. If they would only have one wrapping of tinfoil, so then that may get cut by mistake, and then it'll be the kosher meal will be getting a tray for bleah. So that's why they insist that it should be double wrapped. So you have you always know that you have a backup. You know for sure you have one, but as long as you have one wrapper, it's good enough. That solves the problem.
Along the same lines for Moshe's phone in the previous question, that's the same.
If there
be one covering, that'll be also.
I think so, because when you're going to take out your food, let's say I'm going to heat something, I'm going to take it out, and I had a paper bag. Let's say in the office there's a microwave that the people use mamish for treifas. So the guards over here, they'll use the microwave for treifas. So when I put in my food and I heat it up, then I take it out. So is the paper bag that wrapped it up, is it sopping wet? Not sopping wet at all. Maybe a little soft. Obviously, got a little steam. It's not going to be sopping wet. So you can't be chayshus. Maybe the tray for bleah went through and through. How can it be went through and through? If it went through and through, the paper bag should have been sopping wet. How can I kosher an oven that was used for non-kosher food? How is a microwave oven kosher? See, an oven that was used for non-kosher food, that's a question. Do you really have to kosher it? What's going to happen over here? There is no, the Pashto says, there is no hevel. There's only Zeya there. So Zeya Alpi Pashto is only one directional. So what's the whole problem? What's going to happen over here already? So the minhag is that people... So Rav Moshe is very strict about this. Rav Moshe is very strict. Rav Soloveitchik was mefarsem that for Pesach, if you want to use your oven, the Pesach you just heat it up to the highest degree temperature that you ever used it for chametz. And Kibbolah Kachpolto, that's a question whether Kibbolah Kachpolto applies. The real Kibbolah Kachpolto, as it appears in the Gemara, it means to determine which of the three forms of kosherization you have to use, whether you have to use Liban or Hagol or Milavir Gimel Yomim. But the Poskim used the expression Kibbolah Kachpolto regarding Hagolah, that as long as the water of the Meha Hagolah is 180 degrees and it was never used for a hot treifus more than 175 degrees, so then you say Kibbolah Kachpolto. So even Afila and Tim Tzulayma, that's true, Meikar Adin. Meaning is you always have 212 for Hagolah. And then if you have a big Shas Hatrak with a major Tzorach, then we'll make Kibbolah Kachpolto. Most of the Poskim say like that. So then even if you make it like that by Hagolah, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has in Chilo, he says, but by Libun not. By Libun you have to have Mamish Kash Nisraf to be considered a Libun Kal, or you have to have Nitzotzes Nitzin to be considered a Libun Chom. There are two types of Libun. There's a Machlekes and Rishonim. What constitutes Libun? How hot do you have to burn the metal that it should constitute a Liban? So some are of the opinion Kash Nisraf is something the Rabbanim in America used to say all the ovens went to 550, so they used to say Kash Nisraf is 550. Strictly speaking, it's less than 500 degrees Kash Nisraf, paper would burn, but the ovens went to 550, so they said you have to heat it till 550. So some Rishonim, the Hagos Maimini quote, some Rishonim are of the opinion that's a definition of Liban, you do Kash Nisraf. And other Rishonim say, no, the Gemara says it has to be Nitzotzes Nitzim. So Nitzotzes Nitzim is a much higher temperature. That's something like 950 degrees. As man as they treat all of the metal pots in such a way that it's never going to be Nitzotzes Nitzim. The Samar Abadim say you can't do Liban on any tray for pots, as man as that, because it's never going to be Nitzotzes Nitzim. The Pashtus, we assume, is that that's a joke. We assume that Nitzotzes Nitzim doesn't have to be literally Nitzotzes Nitzim. It has to be so hot that if it would have been the metal in the days of the Gemara, it would have been Nitzotzes Nitzim. So that degree temperature. So that degree temperature, we assume, is 950 degrees. So this is a Machlekes HaRishonim. How hot do you have to do Libun? Libun Kal is what we... Libun Kal means 550. That's how we usually say. On the Libun Chomer is Nitzotzes Nitzim. It has to be 950. So we... So the compromise that's in Shulchan Aruch is the following. Whenever you have Yisura Bola, whenever you have something that's really trade, you have a broiler, and they broiled non-kosher meat on the broiler, so then we're machmed that you need the Liban Chomer on that. It's not enough, 550. You have to have 950. If you have, let's say, a broiler that I used to use for fleishiks, kosher fleishiks, and I want to make it now milchik, I want to make it parava, so some have a meaning you never switch from fleishik to milchik. The Bogan Avraham in Hilchas Yontif quotes that from some Achrenim. The Aruch HaShulchan claims he doesn't think there ever was such a meaning, and the Sfaradim for sure don't have such a meaning. Rav Moshe claims that this is Medina de Gemara. He says it's not a meaning, he's Medina de Gemara, that you're not allowed to switch back and forth from fleishik to milchik. But whatever, Ashkenazim usually observe such a meaning, that you don't switch from fleishik to milchik. In some rare cases, we do permit it. When everything is chametzdik and we're going to kasher for Pesach, then the Mishnah Berurah says if you're kashering for Pesach, once you kasher, then you can really switch over to use it for the opposite. Even though all year long it was chametzdik fleishik, once you kasher for Pesach, you can use it for milchig as well. Or let's say you don't want to wait till Pesach. It's a long time off till Pesach. I want to switch it now. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chas Ham Sofer, make a treif. Make the thing treif, and once you made a treif, then there's no problem. I'm going to put treif of food on. There's no problem making something treif. It's not there. I'm not going to eat it. And once you made a treif, then the minig is you make kasha from treif to kasha. And once you kasha from treif to kasha, then you can use it for the opposite already. So let's say if it's only if you have a case where it's only heterabola, if it's only heterabola, let's say by Sfardim who don't have such a minute, not to switch from fleshik to milchik. Well, the Aruch HaShulchan claims even Ashkenazim, he claims that it's not true. There never was such a minute, even Ashkenazim, there's no such minute. You may switch from fleshik to milchik. So let's say if it's heterabola, so the Shachan Yeridea and the second Chelik Yeridea writes that sometimes you need Libun, and sometimes Hagola would be enough. Let's say I cooked the fleshik soup in a pot, then you need Hagola. And if I broiled fleshik, I broil flesh on a broiler, then you need Libun. That's how the Shach writes in the beginning of the second Chelik Yeridea. Rabbi Kiveger is Masig on the Shach, and he says, what are you talking about? The Gemara says on the last daf and Avodah Zarah, whenever it's a terabola, you never need Libun. Hagola is always sufficient. So that's the generally accepted opinion now. We follow Rabbi Kiveger against the Shach. That's Rabbi Moshe Hazet Shuvah, the Chazanish, and others. They say, we don't follow that Shach. We follow Rabbi Kiveger. Rabbi Kiveger quoted enough in the Gemara, the last daf and Avodah Zarah. Whenever it's a terabola, Hagola is enough. So let's say there's a kli that's only heterabola, so strictly speaking, Hagola is always sufficient. Instead of doing Hagola, it's easier for my purposes to do Libun. Once in a while, it's easier to do Libun. In industries, in the factory, sometimes that's the case. In a private home, it's usually easier, much easier to do Hagola. Or let's say even in a private home, I have a self-cleaning oven. Why should I make myself crazy and do Hagola and have the water overflow? I'll put the pot in the self-cleaning oven, I'll do Limo. 1, 2, 3, it'll be easier. So how hot does it have to be? So the Ramor writes in Hilchas Pesach, whenever Hagola would have been sufficient, you want to do Liban instead of Hagola, then it's sufficient with Liban Kal. Then you don't need a Liban Chomer. Then you wouldn't need a Liban Chomer. So again, so the Liban Kal we assume is 550, and the Liban Chomer is 950. So let's say again, how can I kasher an oven that was used for non-kosher food? So Soloveitchik used to say that chometz, if you have a chometz dika oven, and you want to kasher it for Pesach, so he said it may well be that the bleed doesn't fly. The Pashtus is like that. The bleed doesn't fly in the air from the walls of the oven into the Pesach dika food that you're going to cook over there. There usually is no hevel. There's only right. There's only zeya. Zeya is one directional. It goes in. Doesn't cause the bleah to fly down from the walls and from the lid of the oven into the kosher food that you're cooking now. So the pashtus is that you really shouldn't have to kosher the oven at all. Chometz kodem haPesach, the Rabbi Natam's opinion is, and Mikra Adin Shulchan Aruch, it seems that we paskin like that. Rabbi Natam's opinion is that it's a terabola. That's why we paskin that not banat kodem haPesach is mutter, because it's not banat to hetera. So based on that, we should really have said that you never need libun. On Chometz Dikat Kelim, you should never need Libun, because a terabola is enough with Hagola. So that's the stira in Shulchan Aruch, that the Taz and the Bi'ur HaGadol, they all work on that stira. In Hilchos Pesach, the Mechaber paskens that Chometz Kodem HaPesach is a terabola, so not banat would be mutter. And nonetheless, he says, if you have a baking tin that you bake Chometz Dikat Chalas on, you have to do Libun. Why do you need Libun? It should be good enough with Hagola. So that's a kasha. So some achrenim answer it's only a chumr. Mikra din, it's really good enough with hagola. So that's what Rabbi Soloveitchik said, that even though by Libun there are those who are Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank says that you don't say kibola kachpolto. Only by hagola you say that, but Libun you don't say kibola kachpolto. You just heat it to the highest degree temperature. But chometz kodem haPesach, that the Rabbi Natam holds that the bichlal you never need Libun. It's always good enough hagola. And Mikra Adin, the Mechaber seems to paskin like that. It's only a chumer that you need Libun, and it could well be that you don't have to kasha the oven at all, because the bleah doesn't fly in midair. There is no hevel. So Rav Soloveitchik used to say for chometz that if you heat the oven up to, if you first use Izuyov and you remove all of the chometz bien, you remove all the treifas bien inside the oven, and then you turn on the oven to the highest degree temperature, and you leave it on for the longest amount of time that you would have ever baked the challahs in the oven, so then you can rely on that tzir of kibola kachpolta. And he used to say, this heter is for Pesach, but treifas is a different question. Treifas is Yisurabala, it's a different question. So Rav Moshe was very upset about that, because Rav Moshe l'shitasa held that if you do fleshiks and milchiks b'zachaz in the oven, he held that that's a problem if it's within 24 hours. He was very upset why Rav Soloveitchik was Mekel. But the Pashtus, most of the Poskim have not accepted Rav Moshe's Chumrah. Most are even Mekel to use a non-kosher oven by doing this. You just heat up the oven to the highest degree temperature and you say kibbolah kapolta there. But the Pashto says that the bliya doesn't fly in the air. There is no hevel. There's just going to be zeyah. There isn't going to be any hevel. So that's usually what we assume. If you move into a new apartment and you have the people before you didn't keep kosher, and the oven may be a treif, may have a treif from bliya. So you buy easy offer, oven offer, whatever they call it in the store, in the hardware store. And you shmir it, you have to be careful not to burn off your fingers. It burns everything out. So you remove all the bien, and then you turn on the oven to the highest degree temperature for the longest amount of time, and shine. If it really needs kashering, that'll probably kasher it out. That's usually the practice.
How much is the longest amount of time?
2 hours. Whoever cooks a roast, how long do you leave a roast in the oven? You don't leave it on broil for 2 hours. That no one ever said. You leave it on broil for 2 hours, that's the highest it can possibly be.
And according to Rav Moshe, why would it require leaving gomer for a Yisrael Baal? Isn't it Bliya Al-Yazeya should be enough for a Gala, which would be enough?
I don't know. Rav Moshe said the only way to kasher the oven is with a blowtorch. Lemaise, those who say they use a blowtorch, very questionable. When I first moved into my apartment, I wanted to kasher with a blowtorch. I had a blowtorch. I started to hold it on the wall of the oven. The wall started to cave in already. After half a second, it started to cave in. So what do? They take a blowtorch. They go so quickly, it doesn't have an effect on it. If you take a fire and you put your finger through the fire for half a second, you're not going to get burned. The only time the blowtorch is good, if you have to hold it there for a couple of seconds, that the metal should get hot. The minute the metal's going to get out, it's going to start to cave in. You're going to ruin the whole oven. So the whole thing is a fake. Those who use a blowtorch, they use it so quickly, it doesn't really make the thing hot. I don't think you can kasher mitzias. I don't think you can kasher a normal oven. You can't kasher with a blowtorch. Maybe industrial ovens are different. They hold the blowtorch there for a while, and it's stronger, it's sturdier. So there it doesn't collapse.
Great in the oven. There's usually like two shelves in the oven, so those wouldn't work.
You should really take those out and put them into a self-cleaning oven. Or if this is a self-cleaning oven, so that'll be a lipun. Okay, that'll be a lipun. How is a microwave oven kosher? So that's what you said before. The din is kibola kach polto. So how is the microwave oven boleya? It's plastic inside. So we assume you can't kosher plastic. Moshe is machmal for Pesach, and many are mekel even for Pesach. So let's say, but for treifus, even Moshe is mekel, you can kasher plastic. So we say, kibola kach polta. So how, what's the whole concern? How is it balea? So it was balea, idei zeya, even if you say that there's hevel, it was balea, idei hevel. So we're concerned that the nochri heated up his soup, his treifus soup in the oven, so some of the treifus soup made thick steam, and it got nivla into the walls and into the roof of the oven. So since the whole belia was ayidei steam, so then the hagadah can be ayidei steam. That was a big machlekes in Europe. Can you kasher ayidei steam? Let's say if you have a pot that you cook treifus in, can you kasher by having a steam jetty? By having just like we have a hose that shoots water all over the place, you can have a hose that the steam comes out from. So can you kasher ayidei steam? So that's a machlekes. The poskim said, if the whole bli was only ayidei steam, then l'chol ha'deis you can kasher ayidei steam. If the bli was directly, they cooked the treifa soup in the pot, so then we're machmer that you shouldn't kasher ayidei steam. And Moshe says maybe there's a tzad l'hokel, if the bli was ayidei treifa soup, and the pot is now eina ben yomo, so the whole need for kashering is only by the rabbanik, zeir eina ben yomo, ata ben yomo. So then Moshe says if you can't kasher by having burning hot water directly, so then maybe since it's Eina Ben Yoma, it's only a Chumrim and the Rabbanah, maybe then you can't be Mekel to use steam. But over here, for sure you can use steam. If the whole Bliya was Ayidei steam, then the Beis Shlomo writes like that. Charles Jew is Beis Shlomo.
You have to worry about something very often things splatter onto the walls. And then it's, you have Bein on the walls that's cooking, so
uh-huh.
It's going to be much more serious.
Uh-huh, okay. And then what's the problem is going to come back? It's going to come back, the Bliya is the steam of going to come back ayidei steam. It's not going to come back.
The walls of the microwave will be heated directly from that piece of food, from steam.
But then what's the chashash? Then it's going to come back in because of the hevel now.
The walls of the microwave are now
treif with direct chazer landed on the wall. But now how is it going to make treif my kosher food that I'm going to heat up through the hevel? Are you afraid my kosher food is going to land on the wall and then I'm going to eat it? Probably not. They're afraid maybe the hevel is going to bring it down. So I don't know if you need more than hevel. I don't know if you need more than thick steam to kasha there. If the whole concern only is that the steam later on is going to bring that blia down. So that's what they say in the name of the Rav Moshe Feinstein. How do you kasha a microwave oven? So they say you put in a cup of cold water and you turn on the microwave for a few minutes till all the water will evaporate. All the water will evaporate will cause a whole thick steam inside. So that'll serve as a hagala. The whole blia was ayde steam, so the hagala will be ayde steam. So this will serve as a hagala for the whole microwave oven except for that circle where the cup of water was sitting. So then if they finish that, take another cup of cold water, put it in a different location. So then they turn on the microwave for a couple of minutes till all of that water will evaporate. So all of that water will evaporate, that'll be a hagola on the rest of the microwave oven, including the original circle. That's how they say from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Had a kasha and microwave oven.
What about the one that had a glass plate on the bottom? So,
you
knock on glass.
Well, yeah, the Ramah is machmer for Ashkenazim. The Sfardim hold that glass is not bolea. The Ashkenazim are machmer, the Ramah in Hilchus Pesach writes that we're machmer that glass is bolea, and we treat it as if it would be like a klicheris that Hagola doesn't even help. So some Achrenim say the Ramah was only machmer by Pesach. Chometz is b'mashu, only Pesach. It's usually assumed, the Prima Gadim assumes not so. Prima Gadim there, and Hilchus Pesach assumes that the Chometz Ramah applies for Trefus as well. But then it's the whole Chometz Ramah is very difficult because we all know that glass is takanat balea. We know that glass is not balea. I remember once I was in chemistry lab, I had Professor Shmuel Soloveitchik, that was Rav Soloveitchik's brother. That was the Rav's brother. Abayim Soloveitchik was the youngest in the family. And Shmuel Soloveitchik, a little younger than Rav Soloveitchik. So I had him for chemistry. He used to teach the non-science majors chemistry. He used to teach the history of chemistry. He was a chemist, but the students were shvacha scientists. So I remember once we were in the middle of doing some kind of an experiment with a Pyrex test tube. So I asked him whether Pyrex is balea. So he says to me, "Idiot! Of course it's not balea. You're dropping in exactly two drops of a chemical. So if it's balea, so the whole experiment is off. It has the balea from before. Obviously it's not balea." He used to be very nervous. He was very high strung and extremely nervous. That's the way he's going, "Idiot! Of course it's not balea." But that's the Chumer Saramah. They were machmas as if Pyrex and glass. Is balea. We know it's not balea. It's a shvere chumer. That's why it's questionable how far you have to be machmer with this, that the glass is balea, the pyrex, and we know it's hardly balea, if at all. So that's why there's room to say the Tur quotes in the name of the Baluiter. It's in the Kufcha base, I think. Tur quotes the name of the Baluiter. If you have a trefer cliche in a ben yomos, I mean, I told you, you don't have to kasher, but all the whole need for kashering is only with the rabbanic zera in a ben yomot, the ben yomot, that's the lez daf in avoy de zara. So the Baluiter is quoted as saying that even if it's a klicheres, once it's in a ben yomo, so I mean, I told you, there's no problems only with the rabbanon. So if you do hagola gimel pomim, that would be good enough. That would be good enough. Based on a Yerushalmi, that if you have a blia of Tevel Bizman Azeh. Yerushalmi said the Tevel Bizman Azeh and Eretel is only with the Rabbanon, and he said the Rabbanon Kal. So even a Klicheris, which Hagola doesn't help on, if you do Hagola Gimel Pamim, so it'll be good. So the Baluiter extends it to any Trefer Kli that only needs Hagola with the Rabbanon. Any, I cooked Chazal Shmalt, but it's Eina Ben Yomo. Once Eina Ben Yomo, so Hagola Gimel Pamim is good even though it's a Klicheris. So the Torah says we don't follow that Baluiter, we're only Mekel. If it's only tevel bezman hazeh chalas chutzlar, it's only a chumra mid the rabbanon, or some rare cases like that bishalakum, we would be mekum. So that's a shaila over here. This thing, let's say it's glass. So we know that the glass is not balea. So you have to be machmir so much. Not only is balea, it's treated like klicheris that hagola doesn't even help. We know the thing is not even balea at all. So maybe once it's ein ben yoma, maybe there's room to be mekel to be mitzaref the baluito over there. So the difference, Dodim Lahakal, the Prima Godim there. And that Ramos says that sometimes when Mekal, we're not always Machmer on this, that glass is Balea. Sfardim follow the Mechaber, that glass is not Balea. So they have one set of dishes, Yusuf of Fleshiks and Milchiks. They follow the Psak of the Shulchanot, that glass is not Balea Fartik, so there's no problem. Ashkenazim are a little bit machbe, but not 100%. You know, you don't really treat it as absolutely, it's really boleh. Prima Gordon wants to say if it's only an Isha derabbanon, so then there's room to be mekel. It's an Isha deraisa, there's room to be machmer. If I stay in a hotel, may I heat or cook my food in the oven, meaning in a microwave oven in the room? Usually a microwave oven, I think. If you put it inside a paper bag, so I think there's no problem at all. The tray for bleah is not going to fly through. Even if you say that there is hevel, but once you have a paper bag, unless after you take it out, the paper bag is sopping wet, so then there's a concern. Maybe there was so much hevel that it was showering all over the place, and the tray for bleah flew through the air. But the paper bag is not going to be sopping wet. May kosher food be heated in an oven, non-kosher microwave oven, doesn't need to be covered. Yeah, l'chatchili, you should cover it with a paper bag. Yeah. Can you trust a Gentile maid to cook for you in your kosher kitchen and not make something treif if you turn on the flame on the stove? You have to turn on the flame, that it shouldn't be a prohibition of bisholakum. Then the question is the nochri choshud on kashrus? So the din is a choshud ala dova la don of lamida. One who doesn't observe the din, let's say there's a non-religious Jew who doesn't keep kosher, or there's a non-Jew who doesn't have to keep kosher. So the Mishnah says mchoris and daf choftes and daf lamed a choshud ala dova la don of lamida. You don't apply it echadem visurim to a nochri who doesn't have to keep kosher, but to a Jewish person who in fact does not keep kosher. The only thing is that Tosfos points out in Avodah Zarah, that's the accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch. The Nochri is not choshed to do something lahachis. We're not afraid the Nochri is going to, sometimes the Nochri will do lahachis. There are many cases here in America where the Polish maid, after staying in the apartment for 5 years and raising the children, and on their way back home to Poland in the airport, to tell the Balabatim, I hope you realize that I poured treif of wine into all of your soup, and all of your pots and pans are all treif. Sometimes they are choshed lahachis, but we assume if you don't know one way or the other, the nochri is not choshed to make everything treif lahachis. They're just choshed ala gezel, they're choshed, they may take some of the kosher food, they know kosher food is healthier. They may take kosher food and replace it with non-kosher food. But if it's highly unlikely, or let's say, take as in tehit, like over here, they have the hefke bin outside of the old Beis Medrash. So whoever has leftover food from a bris or a pinyan aben or whatever, so they leave it over there. So the guards are also welcome to take. So the guard is going to take. So the guard is going to take. He's going to feel obligated to replace it with non-kosher food. Not obligated. It's hefke. Kol ha-kodim zocha. He's not obligated to replace it with anything. So there is an inyan of basa shen salamin ayin. That's a sugi in chulin. Basa shen salamin ayin is a chashash. Maybe an animal came. Maybe a bal chai came and exchanged it. So the only balachayim we have there are cockroaches. Cockroaches, you don't have elephants, you don't have animals walking around that can possibly, you don't have any ravens, the Orvim came and delivered the food to Eliyahu HaNavi. You don't have any animals that can change any food over there. So Boshes and online, that's not a chashash. The chashash is, the Nochri is chashad ala gezel. He may take the kosher food and replace it with non-kosher food. He doesn't have to replace it. He knows that it's hefke. So that's not a problem. The food, the kosher food on the bin is not a problem, unless the nochri is going to feel he wants to give his leftover. He's going to leave his shiraim also. Did the gods ever leave their shiraim? I don't think so. Everybody knows only the yeshiva guys leave on the hefke bin. The nochim don't leave; they take, but they don't donate on the kosher. I don't think that's a problem at all. So the nochri is not the nochri god. What are you going to choshish? At 2 o'clock in the morning, the nochri is going to take all the kosher food. He's going to replace it with treif food. He's not choshed lahachis. So if you have a Gentile maid in the house, you don't have to be choshed that maybe going to do lahachis. The problem is, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes, if you're going to have a babysitter, a nochri's babysitter in the house, so maybe she'll bring along some tray for food, and she'll use your pots to warm up her tray for food, and she'll wash them out afterwards, and she'll put them back. The nochri is choshed ala gezel, even though shoshan lamidas nikra gazel, and we tell them, don't use our pots. So we assume that the Nochim a lot of times are chashudim ala gezel. So Rav Moshe claims that whenever you have a non-Jewish maid, a non-Jewish babysitter, all the pots are treif. You have to be choshesh all the parts of trade because the choshed al hagezel and they'll be shosh lamidas and they'll cook their own food. If there is such a chashash, then you got a problem. But if you tell your Gentile maid, I'm leaving food for you. Please eat the food that I leave. And they probably are going to eat your food if they do eat your food. So then what's the chashash? No chashash are going to do lahachas. There is such a possibility, but we're not mechuyev to be concerned about that. It happens once in a while, but you're not mechuyev to be concerned about that.
According to our Mesha, if you tell her that if you mess around, I'll fire you, and there's fear.
Then the Darkei Tshuva writes, whenever there's a chashash that they'll lose their job, they'll get into big trouble, so then you assume, Ruba Daleisa, come on, they're not going to look for trouble. Right. You got a problem. Maybe they brought some non-kosher food with them in the handbag and they're going to heat it up. That is a problem.
How many pots could they use? You don't know what's great.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought Rav Moshe's tshuva was a little exaggerated. He says, whenever you leave a babysitter, so all the pots are trained.
We'd be afraid that they made a mistake with both of the cholov and then they don't tell you about it. They're afraid to tell you.
I mean, if we ask them to heat up for the children.
Or for themselves, whatever. If you leave them alone, you're fine. And they'll do something that is not correct.
Whenever there's such a concern, you have a problem. But if I leave the fleshig pot and I say, here's the fleshig food, use it there. So they're not choshed lahachis. You're not mechuyev to be choshed. They're going to do lahachis. The only thing is, they may do l'tayvas atzmam. They may do the chashurim al hagezel. But lahachis, you're not mechuyev to be concerned.
What about, let's say the fire went out, so then they're going to light by themselves.
Okay. Sometimes you'll have a problem. It depends. You're der tzarech nefesh behemto. You know your stove. Does your stove sometimes, does the fire sometimes go out? If the fire never goes out, it never happens. When I say to the babysitter, please turn off the fire at 12 o'clock. So what's the chashash that it's going to go out? She doesn't have to touch anything. She doesn't have to stir. She doesn't have to do anything. She just has to turn off the fire at 12 o'clock. So if it never goes out, you're not mechuyev to be choshesh.
Right. Can you ever rely on the pilot light being lit by a Jew and not the actual...
The Ramo writes that b'di'eved, the Ramo in the Torah's Chatas quotes from the Mordechai that there's a kula b'di'eved. If the Gemara says that by the two prohibitions, bishalakum and pasakum, the Gemara says by pasakum, if the Nochri did shdira satanur, if the Jew lit the flame, and the Nochri baked the bread, so that's called pas Yisrael. If the lighting of the flame was done by the Jew. So the Ashkenazim HaMekel, that this kula even applies to Bishalakum. The Mechaber Paskin is like the Svardish Paskin, that kula only applies to Pasakum, doesn't apply to Bishalakum. And the Ramos Mekel, it even applies to Bishalakum. If the fire is lit by the Jew, even though the Nochri does the cooking, that's Muta. So then the Ramon, the Torah Schatos, quotes from the Mordechai, that even if the Nochri was Hidlik Eish Meish Hidlik Yisrael, the Jew lit a flame, and the Nochri lit another flame from the flame that was lit by the Jew, and then he cooked the food. Said that even the flame wasn't even lit by the Jew. It was lit by the Nochri from another flame that was lit by the Jew. So the Ramo in the Torah Schatos quotes Lahokal on that. That's B'di'evit. If Hidlik Eish Meish Hidlik Yisrael, is muta b'di'evit. Then yep, so you look in Shulchan Aruch, so all of a sudden it became l'chatchila. How did it jump from being muta b'di'evit? All of a sudden it becomes muta l'chatchila. So the Taz explains that there's a Tosfos in Avodah Zarah where Tosfos quotes the Ravid. It's probably may not be the same Ravid that we're familiar with, some other Ravid. Tosfos quotes Akula that if the Nochri does cooking the base of Shal Yisrael, the Jew is watching and he knows that all the ingredients are kosher, everything is kosher, but it's an issue of Bishalakum. So if the Nochri is cooking the base of Shal Yisrael, so the Ravid says to whoever this Balatosis is that there's no Bishalakum. The Tos is not happy with that heta. So we pass on that B'di'evit it's mutter. L'chatchila it's osur, and B'di'evit it's mutter. And then in Shulchan Aruch, the way they translate this is, b'di'evit heis, the food is mutter, but you have to kasha the pot. So, funny din. Sometimes you say the food is treif, but you don't have to kasha the pot. Here is the reverse. The food is mutter, but you have to kasha the pot. How can you have to kasha the pot if the food is mutter? So the poskim explain, because vis-a-vis the food, that's called b'di'evit. If you're going to say the food is bishul lachlan, then you have to throw it out and give it to the nochri, so that's called b'di'evit. But as far as the pot is concerned, so since it's easy, not so easy, but since it's a remedy, tell the fella to kasha the pot, so it does say slachatchila. So if the nochri cooks bebeis shal Yisrael, we paskin like that, arrive at opinion b'di'evit, that the food is muta b'di'evit, and the pot is, vis-a-vis the pot, it's slachatchila, go kasha the pot. So that's what the Ramos, the Taz explains in the Ramos, if you have a combination of two kulas, that each one we only rely on b'di'evit, nochri should be shal bebeis shal Yisrael, and hidlik eish meish hidlik Yisrael, the nochri lit the flame from a different flame that was lit by the Jew. So since there's an opinion that that's mutter lachatchila, but we're only mekel b'di'evit. There's an opinion that that's mutter lachatchila, but mekel b'di'evit. So if you have the combination of the two kulas, each of which we would only rely on b'di'evit, so then we allow it lachatchila. Yeah. So that's what some of the poskim say. Dayan Grossman has a tshuva about this in his sefer. He was a dayan in London for many years. He passed away already 15 years ago. So he has in his tshuva, Lev Aryeh, that if the Jew lit the pilot light and then the Nochri lights the burners, when the pilot light, that's also called Lehidlik Eish Meish Hidlik Yisrael. One can ding zich and argue the point and say, Hidlik Eish Meish Hidlik Yisrael means the Jew had a fire, the Jew lit a flame that you can cook on, but on the pilot light you can't do any cooking. So he thinks not so. He's Mekel. So that's Mekubal now. If you have the pilot light was lit by a Jew, and then the Nochri lights the burner from that pilot light, that's called Hidligesh Mahesh Hidlikaisa. So let's say if it's a non-Jewish owned restaurant and the Mashgiach just turns on the pilot light, so you don't have a tziruf of the both kulas. You just have a Hidligesh Mahesh Hidlikaisa, but it's not Bebesu Shalisa, Bebesu Shalakum. It's a Goisha restaurant. So that's not really right Lachatchila. The only time we Mata Lachatchila, the Taz says, only time we Mata Lachatchila is if you have the combination of both. It's Nochri Hamavashal Bebesu Shalisa, you have the Raivet Shita. And you have this Mordechai Hidlikesh Meish Hidlikai Yisrael. That the Ramo writes in the Torah Schat is only Mutter B'di'evit, but in the Ramo and the Shulchan Aruch he writes if the Tziruf of the both had termed together, then it's Mutter Lachatchila. But that's only if it's Bebeis Shal Yisrael, Bebeis Shal Yisrael, a Goyish Chinese restaurant, that's taken out right. There are quite a few restaurants where they rely on this cooler, even though it's a Goyish owned restaurant. So that's taken out right. There's some Chinese place in Queens. All the it's owned by goyim, and all the people are cooking are goyim. They have a mashgiach who comes in and out to check everything is kosher. The mashgiach lights the pilot light, so that's takanat right. They rely on hidlik eish meish hidlik al Yisrael. The beis shalakum is not right, but that's what the heter is based on. But the yevid we makel, and it's only mutar lachatchila, but tziruf are both together. If I cook food in a pot that has not yet been tovel, is the food forbidden? This is a discussion in the Balei HaTosfos, the last daf of Maseches Avodah Zarah, where the laws of Tefillas Kelim are discussed, and we pass from the halacha like the Mekilim, like the lenient opinion. But yeah, the food is kosher. May I eat from a vessel that was not tovel if it belongs to another Jew? In the Shulchan Aruch it says, even if I'm visiting by someone else, and I know that they're not tovel their Kelim, so in Shulchan Aruch it seems pretty clear that I'm not allowed to eat in their home. You don't say it's his mitzvah, it's not my problem. The Pashtus, one could argue the point and say Tefillas Kelim is a mitzvah on the owner of the Kli. If I'm not the owner of the Kli, it's not my problem. He's over, he's mevatel mitzvah. The Balabas is not toiv al Kli, is mevatel mitzvah. So in the Shulchan Aruch it says not so. I think they quote a Rav Yo. Someone told me, I never looked it up. Maybe I looked it up and I never found it. Someone told me that the Rav Kook has a tshuva about this and his Shalas of tshuvas. I hardly ever see Rav Kook's tshuvas around. They say the Chazon Ish recommended to the poise learning for smicha, they should learn Rav Kook's tshuvas because they're very classical style tshuva, traditional style tshuvas. So I never learned them. But they told me Rav Kook has a tshuva where he says he really thinks that more correct is that the mitzvah tefillah kelim is only on the owner of the kelim. That what?
That is the
and if I'm visiting by someone else, You don't have to worry about it. So they told me Rav Kook has such a tshuva. He writes that should have been the din, but what can we do in the Shulchan Aruch? It sounds not so. So he says, but he thinks on glass kelim maybe he can be mekel, because glass kelim, most of the poskim assume tefillas kelim on glass is only the rabbanon. So there he can be mekel that mikra din, it really shouldn't be my problem if I'm just visiting. But on metal kelim, which is a real din of tefillas kelim deraisa, that's what we assume. On metal kelim, there are three different opinions. Some are of the opinion that the whole tefillas kelim is only an asmachta mid the rabbanon. Other achrayim hold that even tefillas kelim on glass is min haTorah, and the general accepted opinion is to distinguish that on metal kelim the mitzvah tefillas kelim is deraisa, and on glass kelim it's only the rabbanon. So someone told me Rav Kook has such a tshuva that on glass kelim there's room to be mekel, but on metal kelim you have to follow what it sounds like in the Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to eat. That if you eat from the kelim, you're mevatel mitzvah. The Darkei Tshiva quotes three achrayim who are mekel. It's a father and a son in a Talmud. So it's one person. One fellow woke up on the left side of the bed one morning and he said a psasvara that didn't make any sense. So because he had devoted Talmudim, so his son wrote the same thing as the father and his Talmud wrote the same thing. Three Hungarian, they all said the same thing, that the only time you need to be laskelim is if the kli is zaymed lachila, if you plan to use it. But if I live in New York and I have a restaurant in Chicago, I don't plan to eat on those kelim. Those are kelim that are imidlet for business. It's a little bit of a joke, but I mean for business. My business is that I feed Jewish people food on the kelim. That's imid lachilim. So this Adam Gadol, one day he woke up on the left side of the bed. He had a bad dream that night. So he said, that's not clay suda. It's only clay suda if I plan to eat in the suda. So he said, you don't need tefillas kelim. That's not really right to rely on that. There are some kashrus organizations who do rely on that. If I'm not mistaken, I think Breuers relies on that. That's not really right. That's another thing. When you have a kashrus organization, so what standards do they have to follow? So Kolzman, that Breuers is a local hashgacha for their balabatim. So I remember once a balabas called up Rabbi Schwab. He used to sell cakes in Grunenbaum's bakery that said, written on top in icing, good Shabbos, or have a good Shabbos, something like that. So the Balabasta, my next door neighbor, called up Rabbi Schwab, and she said, but you're not allowed to cut the letters on top. So how can you sell a cake that says good Shabbos? Said in Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to cut the letters, it's moichek. So he said, I'm the Mar Dasri, and I pass that as mutter, goodbye. And he hung up the phone. So that's fine, calls man that the Grunenbaum's bakery is only selling for the yekkes in the neighborhood. So fine, this my next door neighbor happens not to be a yekke. But now Grunenbaum's is a national, international. They sell Grunenbaum's goods stuff in London. They sell it in California. So that's not right to give a hashgacha with your shittas. And the public doesn't know that these are your personal shittas. You have traditions. They claim to have traditions from before the days of Shulchan Aruch. Koyde Matan Torah from Avraham Avinu, the days of Avraham Avinu. Okay, but before from Terach, the days of Terach, whatever. So if they have their traditions, so they have a right to follow their traditions. But you can't give a hechsher and say to the whole public, Kolzmanov is a local hashgacha. Fine, it says the poskim say. You have a little mikveh in Wilkes-Barre. So the rabbi in Wilkes-Barre is in charge of the mikveh. He says the mikveh is good, it conforms to his sheet, it's fine. You have a mikveh in New York. You have a people who are going to use it from New York and New Jersey and Connecticut and Pennsylvania, and they're going to come from all over to use it. You have to institute all the chumras in the mikveh, because you know Hungarians are going to use it, and Yekes, and Chsidim, and Misnagdim, and Lubavitch. Everyone's going to use it. You have to have all the chumras that satisfy. So the same thing in the Hashgach. Let's say the OU is an international Hashgach. So the OU has to satisfy all of the traditional opinions that exist in the Shulchan Aruch. If there's a new Shiloh that comes up in our generation, it's just because some rabbi says that it's Asa, so we're entitled to our opinion also. So the poskim in the OU, if we hold that it's mutter, it's mutter. But if you know traditionally, Hungarians wouldn't eat this, or Galiciana wouldn't eat it, or Polish wouldn't eat it, or Yekis wouldn't eat it. So then we're not allowed to write down that it's kosher, because we're not any of them, because we're Wayu, and Rav Soloveitchik says mutter, but you're selling it to all these people. So those people have a tradition, an old tradition that this thing is Asa. So that's whenever you give a hashgacha on a mikveh or on a food or something, it depends who the customers are. If it's a local hashgacha and you're the rabbi, so you hold that it's mutter. So there's no problem. But if it's your mikveh, but you know it's going to be used by many people, not from your kehillah. It's a hashgach that's going to be my people, not from your kehillah, so you're not the maradasra. So that's not right. You have to give hashgacha. That should satisfy everybody. If I'm not mistaken, I think Breuers relies on this kula by the Tfilas Kelim, that they follow that Hungarian opinion that's quoted by the Daki Chiva, that that's not called Klei Suda. Whenever the Balabas doesn't plan to eat in his own restaurant, that's called Klei Schoira. And Klei Schoira don't need Tfilas Kelim. The Pashta says it is not correct at all.
By the same time, should we say that
you mean there's a Sfardi Hashgacha and they say this is a Sfardi Hashgacha? Everybody knows that it's a Sfardi Hashgacha. It's not a secret. Yeah. Sure?
The same thing would be true, let's say, though you could give Hashgacha to things which are Bishalakum, either Shulchan Aruch or Tarfus, like Reis Yosef. Kinds of problems like that, that's not a problem.
Yeah, everybody knows that only Sfardim are makbid on the glat kosher, and we know that this food is this flesh is not glat kosher. We know it's not bishulakum. We know it's based on the ramor. The yo you give hashgacha based on the ramor. Sfard, you shouldn't eat it. The Sfardim are more machmer than the bishulakum, so they should know all the Ashkenazi hashgachas are not for them. That'll be a problem for them.
I'm ready for eating by an individual. If one speaks to the rabbi of the kehillah and the rabbi is certain that most of his kehillah are toib or kalim, is that would be enough to rely? That, meaning, when one comes into a house, one doesn't know if the person's done tefillah or not. So, what's machbir that suffer? What's enough? Do you have to ask them personally? Can you rely on it?
It's a problem. The Gemara says in the beginning of Psochim, L'mayinaf kimina l'shayle. If you have a rubid, they say, come on, that something is okay. But the guy's here, you can ask him in person. The Gemara says, you're not supposed to rely on the Ruben Leisek Kamar. You're supposed to ask him. So here, if the guy's there, you can ask him. You feel uncomfortable. But that's what you see from that Gemara. Whenever it's easy to ask him, you should ask. Okay, maybe we'll have a break. Maybe we'll continue some other day. We're up to number 19. Okay. Tomorrow I can't continue.